They stood not far from the citadel gate, in the sixth circle, nigh to its southward wall, and about them was a garden, and a greensward with trees, the only such place in the city. There dwelt the few women that had been permitted to remain in Minas Tirith, since they were skilled in healing, or in the service of the healers. But even as Gandalf and his companions came carrying the bier to the main door of the houses, they heard a great cry that went up from the field before the gate, and rising shrill and piercing into the sky, passed and died away on the wind. So terrible was the cry that for a moment all stood still, and yet when it had passed, suddenly their hearts were lifted up in such a hope as they had not known since the darkness came out of the east. And it seemed to them that the light grew clear, and the sun broke through the clouds. But Gandalf's face was grave and sad, and bidding Beregond and Pippin to take Faramir into the houses of healing, he went up on to the walls near by. And there, like a figure carven in white, he stood in the new sun and looked out. And he beheld, with the sight that was given to him, all that had befallen. And when Éomer rode out from the forefront of his battle, and stood beside those who lay upon the field, he sighed, and he cast his cloak about him again, and went from the walls. And Beregond and Pippin found him standing in thought before the door of the houses when they came out. They looked at him, and for a while he was silent. At last he spoke.
"My friends," he said, "and all you people of this city and of the western lands, things of great sorrow and renown have come to pass. Shall we weep or be glad? Beyond hope the captain of our foes has been destroyed, and you have heard the echo of his last despair. But he has not gone without woe and bitter loss, and that I might have averted but for the madness of Denethor. So long has the reach of our enemy become, alas! But now I perceive how his will was able to enter into the very heart of the city. Though the stewards deemed that it was a secret kept only by themselves, long ago I guessed that here in the White Tower one at least of the seven seeing stones was preserved. In the days of his wisdom Denethor did not presume to use it, nor to challenge Sauron, knowing the limits of his own strength. But his wisdom failed, and I fear that as the peril of his realm grew, he looked in the stone and was deceived. Far too often, I guess, since Boromir departed. He was too great to be subdued to the will of the Dark Power. He saw nonetheless only those things which the Power permitted him to see. The knowledge which he obtained was, doubtless, often of service to him. Yet the vision of the great might of Mordor that was shown to him fed the despair of his heart until it overthrew his mind."
"Now I understand what seemed so strange to me," said Pippin, shuddering at his memories as he spoke. "The Lord went away from the room where Faramir lay, and it was only when he returned that I first thought he was changed, old and broken."
"It was in the very hour that Faramir was brought to the tower that many of us saw a strange light in the topmost chamber," said Beregond. "But we have seen that light before, and it has long been rumoured in the city that the Lord would at times wrestle in thought with his enemy."
"Alas, then I have guessed rightly," said Gandalf. "Thus the will of Sauron entered into Minas Tirith, and thus I have been delayed here, and here I shall still be forced to remain, for I shall soon have other charges, not Faramir only. Now I must go down to meet those who come. I have seen a sight upon the field that is very grievous to my heart, and greater sorrow may yet come to pass. Come with me, Pippin, but you, Beregond, should return to the citadel and tell the chief of the guard there what has befallen. It will be his duty, I fear, to withdraw you from the guard, but say to him that, if I may give him counsel, you should be sent to the houses of healing, to be the guard and servant of your captain, and to be at his side when he awakes, if that shall ever be again. For by you he was saved from the fire. Go now, I shall return soon." With that he turned away, and went with Pippin down towards the lower city.
And even as they hastened on their way, the wind brought a grey rain, and all the fires sank, and there arose a great smoke before them. Chapter 8 The Houses of Healing. A mist was in Mary's eyes of tears and weariness when they drew near the ruined gate of Minas Tirith. He gave little heed to the wreck and slaughter that lay about all. Fire and smoke and stench was in the air, for many engines had been burned or cast into the fire pits, and many of the slain also, while here and there lay many carcasses of the great Southron monsters, half burned or broken by stone cast or shot through the eyes by the valiant archers of Morthond. The flying rain had ceased for a time, and the sun gleamed up above, but all the lower city was still wrapped in a smouldering reek. Already men were labouring to clear a way through the jetsam of battle, and now out from the gate came some bearing litters. Gently they laid Eowyn upon soft pillows, but the king's body they covered with a great cloth of gold, and they bore torches about him, and their flames, pale in the sunlight, were fluttered by the wind. So Theoden and Eowyn came to the city of Gondor, and all who saw them bared their heads and bowed. And they passed through the ash and fume of the burned circle, and went on and up along the streets of stone. To Merry the ascent seemed age-long, a meaningless journey in a hateful dream, going on and on to some dim ending that memory cannot seize. Slowly the lights of the torches in front of him flickered and went out, and he was walking in a darkness, and he thought, "This is a tunnel leading to a tomb. There we shall stay forever." But suddenly into his dream there fell a living voice. "Well, Merry, thank goodness I've found you." He looked up, and the mist before his eyes cleared a little. There was Pippin. They were face to face in a narrow lane, and but for themselves it was empty. He rubbed his eyes. "Where's the king?" he said, "and Eowyn?" Then he stumbled and sat down on a doorstep and began to weep again. "They've gone up into the citadel," said Pippin. "I think you must have fallen asleep on your feet and taken the wrong turning. When we found that you were not with them, Gandalf sent me to look for you. Poor old Merry! How glad I am to see you again! But you're worn out, and I won't bother you with any talk. But tell me, are you hurt or wounded?" "No," said Merry. "Well, no, I don't think so. But I can't use my right arm, Pippin, not since I stabbed him. And my sword burned all the way like a piece of wood." Pippin's face was anxious. "Well, you'd better come with me as quick as you can," he said. "I wish I could carry you. You aren't fit to walk any farther. They shouldn't have let you walk at all, but you must forgive them. So many dreadful things have happened in the city, Merry, that one poor hobbit coming in from the battle is easily overlooked." "It's not always a misfortune being overlooked," said Merry. "I was overlooked just now by—" "No, no, I can't speak of it. Help me, Pippin. It's all going dark again. My arm is so cold." "Lean on me, Merry lad," said Pippin. "Come now, foot by foot. It's not far." "Are you going to bury me?" said Merry. "No, indeed," said Pippin, trying to sound cheerful, though his heart was wrung with fear and pity. "No, we're going to the Houses of Healing." They turned out of the lane that ran between tall houses and the outer wall of the fourth circle, and they regained the main street climbing up to the citadel. Step by step they went, while Merry swayed and murmured as one in sleep. "I'll never get him there," thought Pippin. "Is there no one to help me? I can't leave him here." Just then, to his surprise, a boy came running up behind, and as he passed he recognized Birgil, Beregond's son. "Hello, Birgil," he called. "Where are you going? Glad to see you again, and still alive." "I'm running errands for the healers," said Birgil. "I can't stay." "Don't," said Pippin, "but tell them up there that I have a sick hobbit, a Parian, mind you, come from the battlefield. I don't think he can walk so far. If Mithrandir is there, he'll be glad of the message." Birgil ran on. I'd better wait here, thought Pippin. So he let Merry sink gently down onto the pavement in a patch of sunlight, and then he sat down beside him, laying Merry's head in his lap. He felt his body and limbs gently, and took his friend's hands in his own. The right hand felt icy to the touch. It was not long before Gandalf himself came in search of them. He stooped over Merry and caressed his brow. Then he lifted him carefully.
"He should have been borne in honour into this city," he said. "He has well repaid my trust, for if Elrond had not yielded to me, neither of you would have set out, and then far more grievous would the evils of this day have been." He sighed. "And yet here is another charge on my hands, while all the time the battle hangs in the balance."
So at last Faramir and Eowyn and Meriadoc were laid in beds in the houses of healing, and there they were tended well. For though all lore was in these latter days fallen from its fullness of old, the leechcraft of Gondor was still wise and skilled in the healing of wound and hurt, and all such sickness as east of the sea mortal men were subject to, save old age only. For that they had found no cure, and indeed the span of their lives had now waned to little more than that of other men, and those among them who passed the tale of 50 years with vigour were grown few, save in some houses of purer blood. But now their art and knowledge were baffled, for there were many sick of a malady that would not be healed, and they called it the Black Shadow, for it came from the Nazgul, and those who were stricken with it fell slowly into an ever deeper dream, and then passed to silence and a deadly cold, and so died. And it seemed to the tenders of the sick that on the halfling and on the Lady of Rohan this malady lay heavily. Still at whiles, as the morning wore away, they would speak, murmuring in their dreams, and the watchers listened to all that they said, hoping perhaps to learn something that would help them to understand their hurts. But soon they began to fall down into the darkness, and as the sun turned west, a grey shadow crept over their faces. But Faramir burned with a fever that would not abate. Gandalf went from one to the other full of care, and he was told all that the watchers could hear. And so the day passed, while the great battle outside went on with shifting hopes and strange tidings, and still Gandalf waited and watched and did not go forth, till at last the red sunset filled all the sky, and the light through the windows fell on the grey faces of the sick. Then it seemed to those who stood by that in the glow the faces flushed softly, as with health returning, but it was only a mockery of hope. Then an old wife, Eorith, the eldest of the women who served in that house, looking on the fair face of Faramir, wept, for all the people loved him. And she said, "Alas, if he should die! Would that there were kings in Gondor, as there were once upon a time, they say. For it is said in old lore, the hands of the king are the hands of a healer, and so the rightful king could ever be known." And Gandalf, who stood by, said, "Men may long remember your words, Eorith, for there is hope in them. Maybe a king has indeed returned to Gondor, or have you not heard the strange tidings that have come to the city?" "I've been too busy with this and that to heed all the crying and shouting," she answered. "All I hope is that those murdering devils do not come to this house and trouble the sick." Then Gandalf went out in haste, and already the fire in the sky was burning out, and the smouldering hills were fading, while ash-grey evening crept over the fields. Now as the sun went down, Aragorn and Éomer and Imrahil drew near the city with their captains and knights. And when they came before the gate, Aragorn said,
"Behold the sun setting in a great fire. It's a sign of the end and fall of many things, and a change in the tides of the world. But this city and realm has rested in the charge of the stewards for many long years, and I fear that if I enter it unbidden, then doubt and debate may arise, which should not be while this war is fought. I will not enter it, nor make any claim, until it be seen whether we or Mordor shall prevail. Men shall pitch my tents upon the field, and here I will await the welcome of the lord of the city." But Aemma said, "Already you have raised the banner of the kings and displayed the tokens of Elendil's house. Will you suffer these to be challenged?"
"No," said Aragorn, "but I deem the time unripe, and I have no mind for strife except with our enemy and his servants."
And the Prince Imrahil said, "Your words, lord, are wise, if one who is a kinsman of the lord Denethor may counsel you in this matter. He is strong-willed and proud, but old, and his mood has been strange since his son was stricken down. Yet I would not have you remain like a beggar at the door."
"Not a beggar," said Aragorn. "Say a captain of the rangers, who are unused to cities and houses of stone." And he commanded that his banner should be furled, and he did off the star of the North Kingdom, and gave it to the keeping of the sons of Elrond.
Then the Prince Imrahil and Eomer of Rohan left him, and passed through the city and the tumult of the people, and mounted to the citadel. And they came to the hall of the tower, seeking the steward. But they found his chair empty, and before the dais lay Theoden, king of the Mark, upon a bed of state. And 12 torches stood about it, and 12 guards, knights both of Rohan and Gondor. And the hangings of the bed were of green and white, but upon the king was laid the great cloth of gold up to his breast, and upon that his unsheathed sword, and at his feet his shield. The light of the torches shimmered in his white hair like sun in the spray of a fountain, but his face was fair and young, save that a peace lay on it beyond the reach of youth, and it seemed that he slept. When they had stood silent for a time beside the king, Imrahil said,
"Where is the steward? And where also is Mithrandir?"
And one of the guards answered,
"The steward of Gondor is in the houses of healing."
But Eomer said,
"Where is the lady Eowyn, my sister? For surely she should be lying beside the king, and in no less honour. Where have they bestowed her?"
And Imrahil said,
"But the lady Eowyn was yet living when they bore her hither. Did you not know?"
Then hope unlooked for came so suddenly to Eomer's heart, and with it the bite of care and fear renewed, that he said no more, but turned and went swiftly from the hall, and the prince followed him. And when they came forth, evening had fallen, and many stars were in the sky. And there came Gandalf on foot, and with him one cloaked in grey. And they met before the doors of the houses of healing, and they greeted Gandalf and said,
"We seek the steward, and men say that he is in this house. Has any hurt befallen him? And the lady Eowyn, where is she?"
And Gandalf answered,
"She lies within and is not dead, but is near death. But the lord Faramir was wounded by an evil dart, as you have heard, and he is now the steward, for Denethor has departed, and his house is in ashes." And they were filled with grief and wonder at the tale that he told. But Imrahil said, "So victory is shorn of gladness, and it is bitter bought, if both Gondor and Rohan are in one day bereft of their lords. Eomer rules the Rohirrim. Who shall rule the city meanwhile? Shall we not send now for the lord Aragorn?"
And the cloaked man spoke and said,
"He is come."
And they saw, as he stepped into the light of the lantern by the door, that it was Aragorn, wrapped in the grey cloak of Lorien above his mail, and bearing no other token than the green stone of Galadriel.
"I have come because Gandalf begs me to do so," he said. "But for the present I am but the captain of the Dúnedain of Arnor, and the lord of Dol Amroth shall rule the city until Faramir awakes. But it is my counsel that Gandalf should rule us all in the days that follow, and in our dealings with the enemy."
And they agreed upon that.
Then Gandalf said, "Let us not stay at the door, for the time is urgent. Let us enter. For it is only in the coming of Aragorn that any hope remains for the sick that lie in the house. Thus spake Eorath, wise woman of Gondor. The hands of the king are the hands of a healer, and so shall the rightful king be known."
Then Aragorn entered first, and the others followed. And there at the door were 2 guards in the livery of the citadel,
one tall, but the other scarce the height of a boy. And when he saw them, he cried aloud in surprise and joy.
"Strider, how splendid! Do you know, I guessed it was you and the black ships, but they were all shouting corsairs and wouldn't listen to me. How did you do it?"
Aragorn laughed and took the hobbit by the hand.
"Well met indeed," he said, "but there is not time yet for travellers' tales."
But Imrahil said to Éomer,
"Is it thus that we speak to our kings? Yet maybe he will wear his crown in some other name."
And Aragorn, hearing him, turned and said,
"Verily, for in the high tongue of old I am Elessar, the Elfstone, and Envinyatar, the Renewer."
And he lifted from his breast the green stone that lay there.
"But Strider shall be the name of my house, if that be ever established. In the high tongue it will not sound so ill, and Telkontar I will be, and all the heirs of my body."
And with that they passed into the house. And as they went towards the rooms where the sick were tended, Gandalf told of the deeds of Eowyn and Merry Ardoch.
"For," he said, "long have I stood by them, and at first they spoke much in their dreaming before they sank into the deadly darkness. Also it is given to me to see many things far off."
Aragorn went first to Faramir, and then to the Lady Eowyn, and last to Merry. When he had looked on the faces of the sick and seen their hurts, he sighed.
"Here I must put forth all such power and skill as is given to me," he said. "Would that Elrond were here, for he is the eldest of all our race, and has the greater power."
And Éomer, seeing that he was sorrowful and weary, said, "First you must rest, surely, and at the least eat a little." But Aragorn answered,
"Nay, for these three, and most soon for Faramir, time is running out. All speed is needed."
Then he called to Eorath, and he said,
"You have store in this house of the herbs of healing?"
"Yes, lord," she answered, "but not enough, I reckon, for all that will need them. But I am sure I don't know where we shall find more, for all things are amiss in these dreadful days, what with fires and burnings, and the lads that run errands so few, and all the roads blocked. Why, it is days out of count since a carrier came in from Las Arnach to the market. But we do our best in this house with what we have, as I am sure your lordship will know."
"I will judge that when I see," said Aragorn. "One thing also is short, time for speech. Have you Arthelas?"
"I don't know, I'm sure, lord," she answered, "at least not by that name. I'll go and ask of the herb master. He knows all the old names."
"It is also called Kingsfoil," said Aragorn, "and maybe you know it by that name, for so the country folk call it in these latter days."
"Oh, that," said Eorath. "Well, if your lordship had named it at first, I could have told you. No, we have none of it, I'm sure."
"Why, I've never heard that it had any great virtue, and indeed I've often said to my sisters when we came upon it growing in the woods, 'Kingsfoil,' I said, 'tis a strange name, and I wonder why 'tis called so. For if I were a king, I would have plants more bright in my garden. Still it smells sweet when bruised, does it not? If sweet is the right word, wholesome, maybe, is nearer."
"Wholesome, verily," said Aragorn. "And now, dame, if you love the Lord Faramir, run as quick as your tongue and get me Kingsfoil if there is a leaf in the city." "And if not," said Gandalf, "I will ride to Las Arnach with the Eorath behind me, and she shall take me to the woods, but not to her sisters, and Shadowfax shall show her the meaning of haste."
When Eorath was gone, Aragorn bade the other women to make water hot. Then he took Faramir's hand in his, and laid the other hand upon the sick man's brow. It was drenched with sweat, but Faramir did not move or make any sign, and seemed hardly to breathe.
"He is nearly spent," said Aragorn, turning to Gandalf, "but this comes not from the wound. See, that is healing. Had he been smitten by some dart of the Nazgul, as you thought, he would have died that night. This hurt was given by some Southron arrow, I guess. Who drew it forth? Was it kept?"
"I drew it forth," said Imrahil, "and staunched the wound. But I did not keep the arrow, for we had much to do.
It was, as I remember, just such a dart as the Southrons use. Yet I believed that it came from the shadows above, for else his fever and sickness were not to be understood, since the wound was not deep or vital. How, then, do you read the matter?
Weariness. Grief for his father's mood. A wound, and over all the black breath, said Aragorn. He is a man of staunch will, for already he had come close under the shadow before ever he rode to battle on the outwalls. Slowly the dark must have crept on him, even as he fought and strove to hold his outpost. Would that I could have been here sooner.
Thereupon the herb-master entered.
Your lordship asked for Kingsfoil, as the rustics name it, he said, or Athelas in the noble tongue, or to those who know somewhat of the Valinorian.
I do so, said Aragorn, and I care not whether you say now Asea Aranian or Kingsfoil, so long as you have some.
Your pardon, lord, said the man. I see you are a law-master, not merely a captain of war, but alas, sir, we don't keep this thing in the houses of healing, where only the gravely hurt or sick are tended. For it has no virtue that we know of, save perhaps to sweeten a fouled air, or to drive away some passing heaviness. Unless, of course, you give heed to rhymes of old days, which women such as our good Eorath still repeat without understanding. When the black breath blows, and death's shadow grows, and all lights pass, come Athelas, come Athelas, life to the dying, in the king's hand lying. It is but a doggerel I fear, garbled in the memory of old wives. Its meaning I leave to your judgment, if indeed it has any, but old folks still use an infusion of the herb for headaches.
Then in the name of the king, go and find some old man of less lore and more wisdom who keeps some in his house, cried Gandalf.
Now Aragorn knelt beside Faramir, and held a hand upon his brow, and those that watched felt that some great struggle was going on, for Aragorn's face grew grey with weariness, and ever and anon he called the name of Faramir, but each time more faintly to the hearing, as if Aragorn himself was removed from them, and walked afar in some dark vale, calling for one that was lost. And at last Beregild came running in, and he bore 6 leaves and a cloth.
"It is Kingsfoil, sir," he said, "but not fresh, I fear. It must have been culled 2 weeks ago at the least. I hope it will serve, sir."
Then, looking at Faramir, he burst into tears.
But Aragorn smiled. "It will serve," he said. "The worst is now over. Stay and be comforted."
Then, taking 2 leaves, he laid them on his hands and breathed on them, and then he crushed them, and straightway a living freshness filled the room, as if the air itself awoke and tingled, sparkling with joy. And then he cast the leaves into the bowls of steaming water that were brought to him, and at once all hearts were lightened. For the fragrance that came to each was like a memory of dewy mornings of unshadowed sun in some land of which the fair world in spring is itself but a fleeting memory. But Aragorn stood up as one refreshed, and his eyes smiled as he held a bowl before Faramir's dreaming face.
"Well now, who would have believed it?" said Eorath to a woman that stood beside her. "The weed is better than I thought. It reminds me of the roses of Imloth Melwy when I was a lass, and no king could ask for better."
Suddenly Faramir stirred, and he opened his eyes, and he looked on Aragorn, who bent over him, and a light of knowledge and love was kindled in his eyes, and he spoke softly.
"My lord, you called me. I come. What does the king command?"
"Walk no more in the shadows, but awake," said Aragorn. "You are weary. Rest a while, and take food, and be ready when I return."
"I will, lord," said Faramir. "Who would lie idle when the king has returned?"
"Farewell, then, for a while," said Aragorn.
"I must go to others who need me."
And he left the chamber with Gandalf and Imrahil. But Beregond and his son remained behind, unable to contain their joy. As he followed Gandalf and shut the door,
Pippin heard Eorath exclaim, "King, did you hear that? What did I say? The hands of a healer, I said." And soon the word had gone out from the house that the king was indeed come among them, and after war he brought healing, and the news ran through the city. But Aragorn came to Eowyn, and he said, "Here there is a grievous hurt and a heavy blow. The arm that was broken has been tended with due skill, and it will mend in time, if she has the strength to live. It is the shield arm that is maimed, but the chief evil comes through the sword arm. In that there now seems no life, although it is unbroken. Alas, for she was pitted against a foe beyond the strength of her mind or body, and those who will take a weapon to such an enemy must be sterner than steel, if the very shock shall not destroy them. It was an evil doom that set her in his path, for she is a fair maiden, fairest lady of a house of queens, and yet I know not how I should speak of her. When I first looked on her and perceived her unhappiness, it seemed to me that I saw a white flower standing straight and proud, shapely as a lily, and yet knew that it was hard, as if wrought by elf rites out of steel. Or was it, maybe, a frost that turned its sap to ice? And so it stood, bittersweet, still fair to see, but stricken, soon to fall and die. Her malady begins far back before this day, does it not, Éomer?" "I marvel that you should ask me, lord," he answered, "for I hold you blameless in this matter, as in all else. Yet I knew not that Éowyn, my sister, was touched by any frost until she first looked on you. Care and dread she had, and shared with me, in the days of Wormtongue and the king's bewitchment. And she tended the king in growing fear, but that did not bring her to this pass."
"My friend," said Gandalf, "you had horses and deeds of arms and the free fields, but she, born in the body of a maid, had a spirit and courage at least the match of yours. Yet she was doomed to wait upon an old man whom she loved as a father, and watch him falling into a mean, dishonored dotage, and her part seemed to her more ignoble than that of the staff he leaned on. Think you that Wormtongue had poison only for Theoden's ears? Dotard! What is the house of Eol but a thatched barn where brigands drink in the reek, and their brats roll on the floor among their dogs? Have you not heard those words before? Saruman spoke them, the teacher of Wormtongue. Though I do not doubt that Wormtongue at home wrapped their meaning in terms more cunning. My lord, if your sister's love for you, and her will, still bent to her duty, had not restrained her lips, you might have heard even such things as these escape them. But who knows what she spoke to the darkness, alone, in the bitter watches of the night, when all her life seemed shrinking, and the walls of her bower closing in about her, a hutch to trammel some wild thing in?"
Then Éomer was silent, and looked on his sister, as if pondering anew all the days of their past life together. But Aragorn said,
"I saw also what you saw, Éomer. Few other griefs amid the ill chances of this world have more bitterness and shame for a man's heart than to behold the love of a lady so fair and brave that cannot be returned. Sorrow and pity have followed me ever since I left her desperate in Dunharrow and rode to the paths of the dead. And no fear upon that way was so present as the fear for what might befall her. And yet, Éomer, I say to you that she loves you more truly than me. For you she loves and knows, but in me she loves only a shadow and a thought, a hope of glory and great deeds, and lands far from the fields of Rohan. I have, maybe, the power to heal her body, and to recall her from the dark valley. But to what she will awake, hope or forgetfulness or despair, I don't know. And if to despair, then she will die, unless other healing comes, which I cannot bring. Alas! For her deeds have set her among the queens of great renown."
Then Aragorn stooped and looked in her face.
and it was indeed white as a lily, cold as frost, and hard as graven stone. But he bent and kissed her on the brow, and called her softly, saying,
"Eowyn, Eomund's daughter, awake, for your enemy has passed away." She didn't stir, but now she began again to breathe deeply, so that her breast rose and fell beneath the white linen of the sheet. Once more Aragorn bruised 2 leaves of Arthelas and cast them into steaming water. And he laved her brow with it, and her right arm lying cold and nerveless on the coverlet. Then, whether Aragorn had indeed some forgotten power of Westerness, or whether it was but his words of the Lady Eowyn that wrought on them, as the sweet influence of the herb stole about the chamber, it seemed to those who stood by that a keen wind blew through the window, and it bore no scent, but was an air wholly fresh and clean and young, as if it had not before been breathed by any living thing, and came new-made from snowy mountains high beneath a dome of stars, or from shores of silver far away, washed by seas of foam.
"Awake, Eowyn, Lady of Rohan," said Aragorn again, and he took her right hand in his, and felt it warm with life returning. "Awake, the shadow is gone, and all darkness is washed clean." Then he laid her hand in Eomer's, and stepped away. "Call her," he said, and he passed silently from the chamber.
"Eowyn, Eowyn,"
cried Eomer amid his tears. But she opened her eyes and said,
"Eomer, what joy is this? For they said that you were slain."
"Nay, but that was only the dark voices in my dream. How long have I been dreaming?"
"Not long, my sister," said Eomer, "but think no more on it."
"I am strangely weary," she said. "I must rest a little. But tell me, what of the Lord of the Mark? Alas! Do not tell me that that was a dream, for I know that it was not. He is dead as he foresaw."
"He is dead," said Eomer. "But he bade me say farewell to Eowyn, dearer than daughter. He lies now in great honour in the citadel of Gondor."
"That is grievous," she said. "And yet it is good beyond all that I dared hope in the dark days, when it seemed that the house of Eol was sunk in honour less than any shepherd's cot. And what of the king's esquire, the halfling?"
"Eomer, you shall make him a knight of the Riddermark, for he is valiant."
"He lies nearby in this house, and I will go to him," said Gandalf. "Eomer shall stay here for a while, but don't speak yet of war or woe until you're made whole again. Great gladness it is to see you wake again to health and hope, so valiant a lady."
"To health," said Eowyn. "It may be so, at least while there is an empty saddle of some fallen rider that I can fill, and there are deeds to do. But to hope, I don't know."
Gandalf and Pippin came to Merry's room, and there they found Aragorn standing by the bed.
"Poor old Merry!" cried Pippin,
and he ran to the bedside, for it seemed to him that his friend looked worse, and a greyness was in his face, as if a weight of years of sorrow lay on him, and suddenly a fear seized Pippin that Merry would die.
"Do not be afraid," said Aragorn. "I came in time, and I've called him back. He's weary now, and grieved, and he's taken a hurt like the Lady Eowyn, daring to smite that deadly thing. But these evils can be amended, so strong and gay a spirit is in him. His grief he will not forget, but it won't darken his heart. It will teach him wisdom."
Then Aragorn laid his hand on Merry's head, and passing his hand gently through the brown curls, he touched the eyelids and called him by name. And when the fragrance of Arthelas stole through the room, like the scent of orchards, and of heather in the sunshine full of bees, suddenly Merry awoke, and he said,
"I'm hungry.
What's the time?
Past supper time now, said Pippin, though I dare say I could bring you something, if they'll let me.
They will indeed, said Gandalf, and anything else that this rider of Rohan may desire, if it can be found in Minas Tirith, where his name is in honour.
Good, said Merry. Then I'd like supper first, and after that a pipe. At that his face clouded.
No, not a pipe. I don't think I'll smoke again.
Why not? Said Pippin.
Well, answered Merry slowly, he's dead. It's brought it all back to me. Almost the last thing he ever said. I shan't ever be able to smoke again without thinking of him, and that day, Pippin, when he rode up to Isengard and was so polite. Smoke, then, and think of him, said Aragorn. For here was a gentle heart and a great king that kept his oaths, and he rose out of the shadows to a last fair morning. Though your service to him was brief, it should be a memory glad and honourable to the end of your days.
Merry smiled.
Well, then, he said, if Strider will provide what's needed, I'll smoke and think. I had some of Saruman's best in my pack, but what became of it in the battle, I'm sure I don't know. Master Meriadoc, said Aragorn, if you think that I've passed through the mountains and the realm of Gondor with fire and sword to bring herbs to a careless soldier who throws away his gear, you're mistaken. If your pack has not been found, then you must send for the herb master of this house. And he'll tell you that he didn't know that the herb you desire had any virtues, but that it's called Westman's Weed by the vulgar, and Galenus by the noble, and other names in other tongues more learned, and after adding a few half-forgotten rhymes that he doesn't understand, he'll regretfully inform you that there is none in the house, and he'll leave you to reflect on the history of tongues. And so now must I, for I haven't slept in such a bed as this since I rode from Dunharrow, nor eaten since the dark before dawn.
Merry seized his hand and kissed it.
I'm frightfully sorry, he said. Go at once.
Ever since that night at Bree we've been such a nuisance to you, but it's the way of my people to use light words at such times and say less than they mean.
We fear to say too much. It robs us of the right words when a jest is out of place. I know that well, or I would not deal with you in the same way, said Aragorn. May the Shire live forever unwithered.
And kissing Merry he went out, and Gandalf went with him. Pippin remained behind.
Was there ever anyone like him? He said. Except Gandalf, of course. I think they must be related.
My dear ass, your pack is lying by your bed, and you had it on your back when I met you. He saw it all the time, of course. And anyway, I have some stuff of my own. Come on now. Longbottom leaf it is. Fill up while I run and see about some food, and then let's be easy for a bit. Dear me, we tooks and bandybucks, we can't live long on the heights.
No, said Merry, I can't. Not yet, at any rate. But at least, Pippin, we can now see them and honour them. It's best to love first what you're fitted to love, I suppose. You must start somewhere and have some roots, and the soil of the Shire is deep. Still, there are things deeper and higher, and not a gaffer could tend his garden in what he calls peace but for them, whether he knows about them or not. I'm glad that I know about them, a little. But I don't know why I'm talking like this. Where is that leaf? And get my pipe out of my pack, if it isn't broken.
Aragorn and Gandalf went now to the Warden of the Houses of Healing, and they counselled him that Faramir and Eowyn should remain there and still be tended with care for many days.
"The Lady Eowyn," said Aragorn, "will wish soon to rise and depart, but she should not be permitted to do so, if you can in any way restrain her, until at least 10 days be passed." "As for Faramir," said Gandalf, "he will soon learn that his father is dead. But the full tale of the madness of Denethor should not be told to him until he is quite healed and has duties to do. See that Beregond and the Parian who are present do not speak to him of these things yet. And the other Parian, Meriadoc, who is under my care, what of him? Said the warden. It's likely that he'll be fit to arise tomorrow for a short while, said Aragorn. Let him do so if he wishes. He may walk a little in the care of his friends. They are a remarkable race, said the warden, nodding his head. Very tough in the fibre, I deem.
At the doors of the houses, many were already gathered to see Aragorn, and they followed after him. And when at last he had supped, men came and prayed that he would heal their kinsmen or their friends whose lives were in peril through hurt or wound, or who lay under the black shadow. And Aragorn arose and went out, and he sent for the sons of Elrond, and together they laboured far into the night. And word went through the city, "The king is come again indeed!" And they named him Elfstone, because of the green stone that he wore, and so the name which it was foretold at his birth that he should bear was chosen for him by his own people. And when he could labour no more, he cast his cloak about him, and slipped out of the city, and went to his tent just ere dawn, and slept for a little. And in the morning the banner of Dol Amroth, a white ship like a swan upon blue water, floated from the tower, and men looked up and wondered if the coming of the king had been but a dream. Chapter 9. The Last Debate. The morning came after the day of battle, and it was fair with light clouds and the wind turning westward. Legolas and Gimli were early abroad, and they begged leave to go up into the city, for they were eager to see Merry and Pippin.
"It's good to learn that they're still alive," said Gimli, "for they cost us great pains in our march over Rohan, and I would not have such pains all wasted."
Together the elf and the dwarf entered Minas Tirith, and folk that saw them pass marvelled to see such companions, for Legolas was fair of face beyond the measure of men, and he sang an elven song in a clear voice as he walked in the morning. But Gimli stalked beside him, stroking his beard and staring about him.
"There is some good stonework here," he said, as he looked at the walls, "but also some that is less good, and the streets could be better contrived. When Aragorn comes into his own, I shall offer him the service of Stone Rites of the Mountain, and we will make this a town to be proud of."
"They need more gardens," said Legolas. "The houses are dead, and there is too little here that grows and is glad. If Aragorn comes into his own, the people of the wood shall bring him birds that sing and trees that do not die."
At length they came to the Prince Imrahil, and Legolas looked at him and bowed low, for he saw that here indeed was one who had elven blood in his veins.
"Hail, Lord," he said. "It is long since the people of Nimrodel left the woodlands of Lorien, and yet still one may see that not all sailed from Amroth's haven west over water."
"So it is said in the lore of my land," said the prince. "Yet never has one of the fair folk been seen there for years beyond count, and I marvel to see one here now in the midst of sorrow and war. What do you seek?"
"I am one of the nine companions who set out with Mithrandir from Imladris," said Legolas. "And with this dwarf, my friend, I came with the Lord Aragorn. But now we wish to see our friends, Meriadoc and Peregrine, who are in your keeping, we are told."
"You'll find them in the Houses of Healing, and I'll lead you thither," said Imrahil.
"It will be enough if you send one to guide us, Lord," said Legolas. "For Aragorn sends this message to you. He doesn't wish to enter the city again at this time. Yet there is need for the captains to hold council at once, and he prays that you and Éomer of Rohan will come down to his tents as soon as may be. Mithrandir is already there."
"We'll come," said Imrahil,
and they parted with courteous words.
"That is a fair lord and a great captain of men," said Legolas.
If Gondor has such men still in these days of fading, great must have been its glory in the days of its rising.
And doubtless the good stonework is the older, and was wrought in the first building, said Gimli. It is ever so with the things that men begin. There is a frost in spring, or a blight in summer, and they fail of their promise.
Yet seldom do they fail of their seed, said Legolas, and that will lie in the dust and rot to spring up again in times and places unlooked for. The deeds of men will outlast us, Gimli.
And yet come to naught in the end, but might have been, I guess, said the dwarf.
To that the elves know not the answer, said Legolas. With that the servant of the prince came and led them to the houses of healing, and there they found their friends in the garden, and their meeting was a merry one. For a while they walked and talked, rejoicing for a brief space in peace and rest under the morning high up in the windy circles of the city. Then, when merry became weary, they went and sat upon the wall with the greensward of the houses of healing behind them, and away southward before them was the Anduin, glittering in the sun as it flowed away, out of the sight even of Legolas, into the wide flats and green haze of Lebenin and South Ithilien. And now Legolas fell silent, while the others talked, and he looked out against the sun, and as he gazed he saw white sea-birds beating up the river. "Look!" he cried. "Gulls! They are flying far inland. A wonder they are to me, and a trouble to my heart. Never in all my life had I met them until we came to Pelagia, and there I heard them crying in the air as we rode to the Battle of the Ships. Then I stood still, forgetting war in Middle-earth, for their wailing voices spoke to me of the sea. The sea, alas, I have not yet beheld it, but deep in the hearts of all my kindred lies the sea-longing, which it is perilous to stir. Alas, for the gulls! No peace shall I have again under beech or under elm."
"Say not so," said Gimli. "There are countless things still to see in Middle-earth, and great works to do. But if all the fair folk take to the havens, it will be a duller world for those who are doomed to stay."
"Dull and dreary indeed," said Merry. "You must not go to the havens, Legolas. There will always be some folk, big or little, and even a few wise dwarves like Gimli who need you. At least I hope so, though I feel somehow that the worst of this war is still to come. How I wish it was all over, and well over."
"Don't be so gloomy," cried Pippin. "The sun is shining, and here we are together for a day or two at least. I want to hear more about you all. Come, Gimli. You and Legolas have mentioned your strange journey with Strider about a dozen times already this morning, but you haven't told me anything about it."
"The sun may shine here," said Gimli, "but there are memories of that road that I don't wish to recall out of the darkness. Had I known what was before me, I think that not for any friendship would I have taken the paths of the dead."
"The paths of the dead?" said Pippin. "I heard Aragorn say that, and I wondered what he could mean. Won't you tell us some more?"
"Not willingly," said Gimli, "for upon that road I was put to shame. Gimli Gloin's son, who had deemed himself more tough than men and hardier under earth than any elf. But neither did I prove, and I was held to the road only by the will of Aragorn."
"And by the love of him also," said Legolas, "for all those who come to know him come to love him after his own fashion, even the cold maiden of the Rohirrim. It was at early morn of the day ere you came there, Merry, that we left Dunharrow, and such a fear was on all the folk that none would look on our going, save the Lady Eowyn, who lies now hurt in the house below. There was grief at that parting, and I was grieved to behold it."
"Alas, I had heart only for myself," said Gimli. "Nay, I'll not speak of that journey."
He fell silent, but Pippin and Merry were so eager for news that at last Legolas said,
"I'll tell you enough for your peace, for I felt not the horror, and I feared not the shadows of men, powerless and frail as I deemed them."
Swiftly then he told of the haunted road under the mountains, and the dark tryst at Erech, and the great ride thence, 90 leagues and 3, to Pelagia on Anduin. 4 days and nights, and on into a fifth we rode from the Black Stone, he said. And lo, in the darkness of Mordor my hope rose, for in that gloom the shadow host seemed to grow stronger and more terrible to look upon. Some I saw riding, some striding, yet all moving with the same great speed. Silent they were, but there was a gleam in their eyes. In the uplands of Lomardon they overtook our horses, and swept round us, and would have passed us by, if Aragorn had not forbidden them. At his command they fell back. Even the shades of men are obedient to his will, I thought. They may serve his needs yet. 1 day of light we rode, and then came the day without dawn, and still we rode on, and Kiril and Ringlo we crossed. And on the 3rd day we came to Linhir, above the mouth of Gilrine. And there men of Lamadon contested the fords with fell folk of Umbar and Harad, who had sailed up the river. But defenders and foes alike gave